And we're back with Brass Tack Sunday, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. I just want to get some of the WhatsApps that we would have received through the program and have some questions here for the panel. This one says, I have no problem with free education, free university education, but there should be conditions. For example, the first degree free, allowing only one switch, and you should pay a quarter of the cost if you're switching, thus eliminating the loiterers. This one, this non-contributory pension needs to be ended and not increased. This is a bad policy. We cannot condone this practice of living and working all your life and not contribute to your own pension, but expect central government to do it for you. This one here, it says, having watched the launch from Ontario via social media, I am convinced that the Barbados Labour Party, they're ready and serious about taking up the mantle of government in Barbados, which, having come from a very low ebb, it is now ready to uplift itself and believe again to inspire and build greatness again, led by a capable visionary leader and her talented team. I'll put this one question and we go back to the panel. Gentlemen, what is your opinion on Dr. Leroy McLean running against his general secretary and party? Does this create more division in the campaign and party?
Without a doubt. And I think everybody knows that. He's obviously very peeved at having been overlooked. And it will have the effect of taking some votes from the Democratic Labour Party.
I did an interview with, this is Senator Price speaking, I did an interview with Dr. Leroy McLean. In fact, it's in the Sunday Sun today, in the Campaign Express section. And I can tell you, Leroy McLean is a Dem. True and true, a true blue Dem. He is extremely upset about the whole process, the way it was done in terms of the selection of George Pilgrim. But what impressed me about the whole thing is when Leroy said to me that he needs to leave the door open for other people like Andrea Worrell, who, for example, has the ability to go on to be a good representative as far as Leroy is concerned, because he recognizes that his days in elective politics are short, and that
how is he going to leave that door open?
Because if he wins the constituency,
if he wins,
okay, because he expects to win, he's in it to win. He has made that quite clear. He is in it to win.
Well, so is Natalie.
Okay.
let's finish because I think it's two sides to it.
Leroy was some of us know that Leroy was on the ground campaigning.
He's also not a prostitute,
right? Yeah, but the whole point about it is that Leroy is well known in St. John. He's well known in actually. In actually articulating some of the concerns of the constituents of St. John. But as I said, I was particularly impressed with the fact that he was making the point that you don't want a situation now where you're going to have George Pilgrim coming. He sits there because it's a stronghold, and yet the concerns, like which seems to be the norm, the 3 or 4 hours of people waiting in the bus stand for a bus to get home, the horrendous roads. I mean, Leroy McLean went through detail in terms of which roads are bad, which roads are good, you know, what can be done. Those of us who
it only complicates matters for the Democratic Labour Party in St. John. Against the backdrop of all the concerns that have been expressed, about representation and stuff over the last.
Let me say because I did not one but two polls in St. John, and the second one, the details of it were released in the press. And what I think is clear up there is that St. John is in a place that it has not been before. I think the level of disruption to the normal flow of St. John is unprecedented. And I think that Leroy appreciates one of two things. One is that he can either A, win, which I also think is unlikely, or B, he can stop George from winning. Because I think he understands that if George wins, George entrenches himself in St. John from this point onward, and George is a relatively young person, for the next 30 years or at least. While if George does not win, I think the greater likelihood is that he can disrupt enough to stop George from winning and to ensure that the Democratic Labour Party, when it reorganizes itself, as it ultimately, I believe, will have to do after the next election, they can look to put someone like Andre World in that seat. And I heard him say before that he has a lot of confidence in Andre. He's a St. John man, a mm-hmm. young guy, a senator, and so on, former senator. Then they can look to install someone like him and perhaps recapture St. John and start to build St. John back in the way that it was before. So I think that is a two-pronged strategy. Mm-hmm. If you win, great. If you don't win, ultimately you can stop George from winning. And I think that he believes that George's victory is not necessarily in the best interest of the Democratic Labour Party, and that seems to be the logic. Yeah. It's a brave move, in my opinion. I certainly would have advised him against it, because I think that he also runs the risk of being agitating.
He don't get thrown out of the party for things like that.
Well, it's possible.
But actually, he's challenging anybody to even try that.
Party, yeah.
He's actually.
I was going to ask that. If you can run as an independent while still being in the party.
I don't see why not. And I tell you this, I think that depending on the outcome of the next election,
it depends upon the strength of your leader
in
the party.
He may very well be in a position to negotiate that is unprecedented. He may very well be in an influential position coming out of the next election, depending on how weakened the DLP is, if it is weakened at all. There's a couple of things I wanted to say, though, quickly, because I'm going to have to run just before one to get another appointment. And this is this whole question of the likely swing and the impact of the swing, because I'm hearing a lot of talk about the idea of seat safety. In the context of this election.
You focused on that today in looking at St. Michael's South, right?
Mm-hmm. You did?
I think you did.
Yeah, looking at St. Michael's South in the Prime Minister's seat, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, which we can talk about that. But yeah, I do think the Prime Minister's seat is vulnerable. And I think the curious thing about this election is that the Prime Minister was saying that this is like 1971. I disagree with him. I think the 1971 election was the 2013 election. And if you look at the 71 election, if you look at the 81 election, the two things that they have done, which that this next election has done, they have laid a groundwork in terms of establishing several marginal seats. If the Democratic Labour Party or if the Barbados Labour Party gets anywhere in the vicinity of a 10% swing, they're looking at taking between 10 and 15 seats. And I think that that is a significant difference between this election. And this is the reason why I'm saying if you're going to peg it, it has to be an 86 or a 76 election. And that is the kind of swing that we're looking at, based on the fact that the number of seats that you have bunched up in the 6 and 7% swing category is so high in this next election. So if you, as I said, if you get a 10% swing, which is entirely consistent with the polling that I have been seeing, you're looking at having a whole lot more than just 5 or 6 seats. I mean, the Astra prediction is nonsense. But the bigger thing for me is, you know, the idea of the comparative, and the comparative base has to be a 86 or a 76. It cannot be a 1971, because the 1971 election, and I agree that the 1971 election was really the 2013 election, where you had all of these big crowds of people going, and the Democratic Labour Party still prevailed. I feel that in 2013, it was the same thing. I saw BLP crowds that were large, but the DLP prevailed. So the analysis the Prime Minister brought was interesting, but I pegged that in 2013. And I'm saying that as a result of the 2013 result and the number of marginal outcomes that we have, that's where I feel that, you know, a reasonable swing will result in a good seat haul, a fairly decent seat haul.
I'll peg this that WhatsApp. Well, go ahead, Glenn. Go ahead.
Yeah. Peter, what would happen if the swing were higher, even 15%? What would you think would be the taking seats?
But you can work out the mass thing. You can work out the mass, Glenn. If I'm saying that if you get 10%, you're looking at 10 seats. If you get more than 10%, you're looking at a historic victory for the Democrat. If you get the same 60% swing that the DLP got in 1999, then you're looking at taking all but 3 or 4 seats.
But remember, you did a survey back in November, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was the swing then?
I haven't published it.
Oh, okay.
With good reason.
With good reason.
We thought without.
But I can tell you, the swing was significantly higher than 10%. So that is ultimately where I think that the conversation is going. And the highest swing we have had historically was 16 in 99. And the point is that this cannot be a 99 election, largely because it's a change election. Not the 99 election was abnormal because it was an election where the Barbados Labour Party strengthened. And it strengthened on the back of a 94 election. And the 94 election, to me, was like the 1971 election, because they had all these marginal seats. The NDP collapsed, and the Barbados Labour Party consolidated its support, and 99 was the outcome. We don't have that factor this time that will essentially result. What we have is a change factor. So that's the comparative base that I am using.
And you've dismissed the presence of the third parties.
I have.
And I want to make a comment on that particular issue, the one that you just mentioned, Sanka, and that's the third party. You know, there are times that I read headlines in the newspaper and don't read the content, and I form one opinion. And then I read the content and I form another opinion. I saw the opinion published in, I think it was the Barbados yesterday, that said Mr. Arthur said the third parties would have an effect. But when I read the article, the most important part of the article to me was the last comment when he said, none of the third parties will win a seat. Mm-hmm. So to me, the headline is, you know, third parties will not win a seat. Because what you are effectively doing is telling the voters, don't vote third party, it don't make no difference. They're not going to win a seat. You know, they're just going to be disruptive influences. And to me,
you're voting a third party for spite because you want to punish the Barbados Labour Party. You want to ensure me a Motley
But Peter, no, you see, and that's the problem I have. I don't like drawing conclusions as to people's intent. What I'm saying to you is that, to me, the killer punch is saying, none of the third parties can win a seat because you are saying to the voter, forget the motive, you're saying to the voter, a third party is a waste of a vote.
I still think some people will go ahead and vote for them based on protest voting. You know, they're tired of the two established parties and telling people X there.
But hold on, Corey, again, listen to my comment. My comment is that you're telling an
undecided voter, I agree.
Third parties, even though you say they will upset the balance, will not give you a voice.
Correct.
And to me,
if you will not be backing a winner.
If not, no, you won't have a voice. Because if the party does not win a seat, you've lost your voice. You've lost your voice as a government. You've lost your voice as an opposition. You've just lost your voice. There are people who say to me, you registered to vote in St. Thomas, your vote is a wasted vote. And I say, why? Say, because it won't change the balance of power in St. Thomas. So there are people who feel that when you live in a constituency that's considered a stronghold, your vote is a wasted vote. So if you tell a voter, and you lump them all into this thing called undecided, that was your lumping, okay?
Uncertain.
Right. Yeah. You're saying to the person that even your protest vote is not going to give you what you want, which is a change in the balance of power between two parties.
Right, but what you're
and to
protest,
me, that is something
significant. And then this is the view that you're articulating that I have always felt, that the significance of a third party is the extent to which it can disrupt or it can force someone to lose. And I think that was clear in Arthur's position from the very beginning. You know, you have to be careful with these third parties because they can cause disruption. But the fact of the matter is that, I mean, we all know they're not going to win any seat. Look at what happened in Antigua and Barbuda. Right?
Disruption with for who?
The Antigua Barbuda Labour Party paid a heavy reliance on Joao Messiah's capacity to be able to deliver the NDP, what they call it, the DNA. The DNA support that would have been disruptive in three or four constituencies. And she didn't even disrupt votes in the constituency that she ran in, that she was leading as leader. She wasn't even to muster enough support. And the DNA was polling better than any of these third parties that we have. So ultimately, we know that they're only there to be disruptive. And the question is, can they be successful in being a disruptive? And I'm saying that the data does not suggest that they can.
But Peter, don't forget as well, and I think it was the NDP in the election after they were formed, where they had significant support, but it was stretched across so many areas that they made no difference.
Right, same here.
But in the very marginal seats, can it be the case?
It can be disruptive in the marginal seats. Very disruptive in marginal seats, depending on the level of support, which is what I wanted to zero in on.
We look at people that won by 7 votes, 124 votes, 25 votes. But that would
change the swing. You're looking at, Corey, that's an important point. You win by 7 votes in a swing of 2 percentage points. If you take a swing of 10 percentage points, and let's conservatively say that that is what is possible. If you take a swing of 10 percentage points and you address it across the island, the possibility for variations where you're going to have these small margins is very low.
Okay, so you're saying with the swing that we don't get these close margins.
When you start to look at it in the context of the data that you're seeing, It does not make sense to suggest that these third parties are going to be all of that influential. Now, I believe that
all
that
things don't remain constant. That's the point.
Well, which is fine. And this is the reason why, in terms of my own polling, I'm monitoring the situation as we go. And I'm saying that the best information available to me suggests that the impact is not going to be that significant, largely because of the size of the swing that you're seeing.
Precisely.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, even if you take the swing when I last published it, right, it was definitely higher than 10%. And once you get into those numbers, you're not going to see these 7 vote margins and whatnot like you saw in 71, like you saw in 2013. And that to me is a significant thing. I like the DNA analysis in Antigua, because I was able to show by looking at it, when all was said and done, she did not even affect the outcome in her own seat, you know? So, and I think that the situation with the UPP here is going to be same.
Okay.
Let's say the benefit of your presence again in a couple calls, yeah? So, good afternoon and welcome, Brastat Sunday. You're on the air. Good afternoon. All right, let's go. Brastat Sunday, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon to your esteemed panel there, all the moderators, converse today, water gathering. No, I don't want all the preempting. Wait until tonight, and then you have the to talk tomorrow about what the Democratic Labor Party is going to launch, etc. There was a lot of talk about what went on last night. I have no quarrel with that. One or two comments were made, though, like, I must thank David for having understand, unlike Mr. Wickham, what is the strategy in going into the constituency there tonight and launch by the stadium. Mr. Wickham is of a different view that they should go to the south. I like the cutting trust and the discussion between the moderators, the big shots, the philosophical views and things coming out. It really sounded good. And I think everyone held their own in that regard. Although some of the comments I would not have agreed with, like, for instance, this one, Mr. George Penn and Ms. Marley, you know, this embrace, a lot of facade and the greatest pretense in the last war. It's one of the biggest pretense going on now.
But you know, I always like to look at the balancing act that has to be done, because a lot has been said by Dems about what they perceive to be the differences, and there have been scenarios that have come out in the open that have shown differences. But there have been differences, clear and strong differences, coming from within the camp of the DLP as well. The utterances that have come, for instance, in the last 5 years from the Minister of Agriculture, Dr. David Eswick, about economic policy.
Yeah.
I mean, that has been a very significant divide. That's a divide within a cabinet. You understand? Somehow, this is something that the Democratic Labour Party has been able to sweep under the carpet. Perhaps they have been ably assisted by the Labour Party that hasn't really made much of it. Right? But all I'm saying to you is that to the observer, to the keen observer, this notion of two political parties, one unstable and the next one stable, that does not seem to, it don't ring right with me. Okay, I don't see that.
Let me make a comment in response to what you said, because you're saying that the opposition didn't make much of it because it wasn't anything that would merit having a lot of ideas. That was what you're
But sir, but sir,
surprise, surprise.
No, sir. The fact about analysis, the matter. No, but the fact about the matter is that Dr.
Wickham doing.
Yeah, but sir, as I was saying, Dr. Eswick made the point that the economic policies have failed. Okay, no, don't mind what Don Villains has been saying. He voted and he has made his like a maverick. But the fact about the matter is that Dr. Eswick said categorically that the economic policies failed, and he said they were going to fail from before. And when they happened, he said they had failed. He made that quite clear.
Sanka, except that I think one should also remember that it's possible that individuals who have differences could, for whatever set of reasons, decide to band themselves together, overlook the differences for either the greater good, the larger good, or in the interest of their own survival or long-term interest.
Correct. And as some people often say, Politics makes us strange bedfellows.
Final comment here now. Final comment. Hello?
Yeah, go
final
ahead.
Comment. You're there?
Yeah.
But yeah, I wonder, look, you see this facade? Look, Ms. Maul isn't going to forgive those persons that would have threw her out for the last election. There's a lot of pretty facade.
People said you're saying about Mr. Stewart not forgiving the Eagle 11.
Sorry?
Mr. Stewart forgave the Eagle 11?
No, I don't want to hear no Eagle 11.
That's because they've gone up to 13? I need to behave myself. Look, so let me say to you, you've been one of the strongest and most consistent supporters of the Democratic.
Relentless.
Yeah, relentless in your support. However, I have not forgotten, and I could say this, I have not forgotten that for at least 3 years, you went very quiet, and I was beginning to wonder whether perhaps you were one of the eager 4.5. I don't know. I don't know the correct figure.
But he's back. He's back with vengeance.
He's back again. Strange bedfellows. Convenience.
Carl, don't worry with you. Don't let it be said we gang up on you.
Convenience. No, but let me. There's something that I wanted to hear, Glenn, on in particular, and the rest of you, and it's this: the politics of inclusion practiced by Owen Arthur, I thought, changed the voting patterns in certain constituencies. Sorry, Peter left, because I would like to hear more of this. Have those tendencies been reversed with the change in the administration over the last 10 years?
Let Glenn take it first. Yeah. He said you wanted
because
to
I wanted to hear him on it.
I would think that at a superficial level, it probably has been overtaken by a change in personalities. Except that I would like to say that the parts of inclusion also existed outside of, not only outside of the barber slave party, but within the BLP, in the sense that Mr. Arthur was able to, for those persons who were considered his rivals or opponents or not strong supporters or whatever, he, to a large extent, was able to find roles for them to still make them part of the effort, to make them feel that they were contributing, let them contribute, and that in a way helped to consolidate the cohesion that was being undertaken in the party, and therefore gave him an easier time to get ahead with the wider program. But in Barbados, I think that it is personality driven. Mr. Barr was supposed to possess and practice similar philosophy, where he brought people from the out of the blue, from even from opposing camps, and was able to meld them into the fabric of the party. So I think it all depends on the party, the composition of the party, the personality of the leader, or even the group called leaders also have to satisfy their supporters. And if you bring somebody that might alienate the support within the group, that might therefore discourage you from doing such.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right, Brass Tacks, 1 o'clock. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Corey.
Good afternoon.
Corey, on to the panel. I'm very sorry that Peter Lee just now. But the 71 elections, as he was referring to, is a very important election. And I observed it last night. I cannot comment so much on St. John at present because I am involved in the St. John election. But let me say this to the panel, and especially to David this morning. 71 elections saw the decrease in the voting age. Then it was reduced to 18. And last night, the youth at that meeting was a substantial amount of young people. Because I would say that I'm in my 60s now. And I would have 4 or 5 children that would be able to vote. But the thing is that I would be only one person in 2018. But look, there are about 6 children that be coming on that would vote on their own. And the youth is going to play an important role in this election.
Yeah,
I don't mind. Mm-hmm. What people say. You see that 71 election? That was so vital.
The catalyst on this occasion is the university fees. I'm sensing that a lot of young people are really incensed about that. And I would not be surprised if it tends to drive. I mean, that doesn't mean that everybody who might be on the, you might call it the bandwagon, or might support the Labour Party around now, this time, would be eligible to go to university. I mean, but You know, people live with the aspiration. People also have friends and relatives who articulate their concern, and people who want to drop out and stuff. So the idea of politically saying to people, I will restore it, is very, very potent. And it will be, it's left to be seen tonight or further on in this campaign exactly how the Democratic Labour Party is going to deal with it. Because in a sense, this is the party that has always had the privilege and the position of being able to say, we brought this.
But you would know, David, that the Prime Minister has some of the statements that were used.
I don't remember that. Let me draw it to your attention.
You remember the statement that was used to carry back.
Let me make the point, as we say last time.
I'd like to make a point on this sort of question of the state of one election. I agree that the U factor was decisive then, and it could probably be decisive now. But you also have to remember that an election for Saudi one being the first election which 80-year-olds voted. It was also a change of constituency boundaries. It also represented single member constituency for the first time. When you consider the factor of gerrymandering that takes place in any change of boundaries, etc., that also could have thrown up a number of changes that might have been expected.
But I still think you have to bear in mind that in 71, you had Errol Barrow had just taken us to. Yeah, he was at his peak. We just had general elections in 66, and
right.
You know, and as a, and to, I have always felt that we should establish some kind of monument to the kind of minister that Bernard St. John was in the government of Barbados. I mean, he was one of those people who towered above most. And when it came to the representing Barbados abroad and stuff, I mean, people spoke so highly of his
passion.
That's a good point.
Let me make the point. But having established his strength in that regard, as a politician, he was weak. He was weak in terms of being able to hold on to his seat. And then he lost his seat 71, and he lost his seat as prime minister. All right, so that to my mind makes the point.
Carl, I know you're anxious to respond to that, but when you respond, I want to finish your other point quickly because we're coming to the end of the program.
David, let me make the point. Mm-hmm. In 1971, Harold Bernard St. John lost his seat. He had just came into the politics in the first 5 years. And by 1970, the late Sir Grant Lee resigned. I would throw Harold St. John, Bernard St. John, into leadership. Before even spending 5 years in Parliament, the same thing happened to him in 86. When he became Prime Minister, he was thrown into leadership at the Deputy Matters. He did not have a fair chance of programming.
No, but you're not dispelling the point. You know, you're explaining where it happened. But
David,
I
have a take on this.
Yes, Glenn.
To me, it was not that Mr. Sahara was a weak politician. Sahara had certain principles, and he was not prepared to sacrifice. He was not prepared to pander to lowest common denominator to appeal to people's lowest.
So that doesn't. But that can weaken you as a politician. It can make it makes you stand out as a man. You're a strong man, and you're seen as a principled person. But as a politician, I take
the view that politicians are also allowed to have high principles. You know.
Well, you know, I accept that. But you have to weigh the high principles against those
political
things that are political expediency.
Is the name of the game. I want to add something, though, quickly. I think it's very, very important. We talk about the youth vote, and we talk about the university graduate. And I think that that has captured a certain type. And I'm going to say type instead of class. But what has also captured, to me, another type of young person is the type of strategy that they're using. The music, the Lady Essence, the Mole. They've actually gone out there. And what I'm sensing from a certain type of young person is that the BLP events are events to be at. Like the picnic. That was the place to be. This launched last night. These are people that generally in the past have not been interested in elections at all. Mm-hmm. But the BLP now, all of a sudden for them, and they've been able to capture the imagination for them now to say we are supporting the Barbados Labour Party. We saw it in 2008. With the youth manifesto, we saw people like Marshall. They actually led a youth campaign parallel to the other campaign in 2008. The Barbados Labour Party has now taken on that strategy.
Yeah.
Yes, go
ahead. Yeah, I just want to say that I have never one been, I'm yet to be convinced of the usefulness and potency and effectiveness of music per se. I find that from talking to young people, a lot of them go for the effect. I remember very well the crowd that assembled at Haga Hall, which people thought was the actual launch for the BLP's 2013 campaign, but it was only a music extravaganza, right? And the BLP, to me, in my mind, given the results, particularly in St. Michael, was not able to translate the attendance at that music extravaganza, which attracted hordes of young people into active voting on the day for whatever reasons.
But McGlynn, I'm surprised at your comment, yeah, just because you in the culture and you know the influence of this thing. I'm not just talking about they're going for the fact. I'm talking about these people saying, no, you know, things dread, we're going red, and they're so enamored by Mia Motley and the Barbados Labour Party. I'm talking about my experience on the ground working with these people, you know. I myself am even surprised at their interest now in civics and current affairs. They're telling me things and I'm surprised.
I don't know about that part of it, but I am surprised by Glenn's comment about music, because... Glenn, I mean, from, again, your involvement in culture, and look at it, even from religion, Onward Christian Soldiers is a song to get the people marching. You don't sing it to Away in a Manger, which is a lullaby. Music has always been a part of galvanizing the army and the troops into battle. That's why you have a drum corps and a bugle corps and everything else.
That's what Goebbels exploited that to the hilt. Right.
I have a book on my desk. Thank you, Mohammed Amin Nasser. I read it for my vacation, called The Dictators, from right down to Stalin. It's a brilliant write, and it talks about the use of music and the use of language and voice. And people with the ability to be articulate.
My concern here with the youth is this.
It's not say the youth can vote. Eh? Let me just add that part.
And they vote, if you come out with, I mean, the Democratic Labour Party did it in 2008. They had a separate youth manifesto, as Corey said. But it is the follow-up. It is the capacity to maintain a certain momentum among the youth and to engage them. That is where political parties in Barbados have been failing consistently.
That's the point. That was at the back of my mind when they made those comments. You have to sustain that through the campaign.
And it's
hard. Have competing influences.
The question is, how hard? Why is it hard to do that? Why is it that the youth unemployment tends to be so high, and that you don't seem to get anything to fit them? I mean, the Democratic Labour Party has been running these constituency councils. He has been dealing with the youth football and stuff like that. But something is missing, and it is not peculiar to this particular...
I think it's easier to maintain it now. As I told you, these songs that I'm talking about, three of these songs reaching my phone a week. I don't have to go anywhere. It is easier to maintain in that aspect. And I've seen matching policies in relation to the first-timer employment policy. We heard about that last night. The loan for young entrepreneurs and so on. So I think they're trying to match it up with the policy. I think my only concern, I don't want to be a cynic, but I think that I've heard similar things before and they've not been implemented. It don't stop me from giving persons a chance, but I've heard the talk before. I have not seen the walk as it's been laid out.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of people who, after all that has been said in a string of general election campaigns in Barbados, we are at a point where there is so much disappointment about the enfranchisement concept. We would have thought that after all the years that we spent educating people in Barbados and giving people masters and doctorates and first degrees and that sort of thing, that there would have been by now a matching growth in the development of business other than lawyers and the professionals.
Wealth creation.
This really is the next major frontier. This is if we are really to realize the Arrow Barrow dream,
mentality.
Corey, on a slightly different angle, because we know we're coming to the end of the program, I just want to say that in between now and next Sunday, and for the rest of the campaign, please expect that other dynamics will be kicking, and some of the things that we might consider to be issues now might not feature so prominently, and things that we don't expect will come to the fore.
A day in politics, they call it.
But I also want to add to
what... expect that.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn. I want to add to what Corey said just now, what David said about empowerment and enfranchisement. Judging from my two children, my three children as examples, there is a shift in the thinking of the youngest about the future. They no longer depend on their parents to tell them, this is what I'd like you to do. There's a generation of us who did that. I wanted to be a broadcaster. My father said, get a job. Dying a job, nobody ain't gonna pay you, nobody gonna bother. So I followed him.
And you're a broadcaster today.
Yeah, but look how long it took. Thank you, David. Thank you, David. Thank you, David, for pulling me in. But there is a generation today that says, this is where I want to go. This is how I hope to get there. And this is how I'm going to chart my way. There is also, to me, the counter to that, where I've been following the nations going through constituencies where people are saying, older people are saying, give the young people a chance, give the young people a chance. Whereas before, it was more, you know, we want to run this. So it seems to be a change in the thinking that says we have an army, going back to the army, of young people who need the opportunity to grow and go their own way.
The last time that the Democratic Labour Party came close to dealing with an army was when Mr. Barrow spoke of the army of occupation.
David, I did not want to mention that, but as soon as I saw People's Army, that's what struck me. But what I would say very, very quickly is that I'm looking forward this evening, the Democratic Labour Party. I would their launch. I would expect to hear a bit more about the economy. Because at the end of the day, all roads lead to the economy. Everything that is going wrong in Barbados is because of the economy. They have made a case that they have nothing to be ashamed of, so they need to tell us why we need to re-elect them. And I think all the onus is going to be on them, and that is going to be the focus going forward. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have on Thursday the launch of the BLP's manifesto.
Well, you know how it's going to work out. Tonight, there was a BLP launch last night. The Dems are launching tonight. But the Barbados Labour Party is also having a meeting tonight. I think it's up there.
There's a big comedy show too. Today.
So
it's a good afternoon to the general in the army and the lieutenants. I just want to tell everyone to enjoy. It's been Brass Tax Sunday. I want to thank all who have made this possible. And of course, we got to say thanks to Williams Industries Incorporated.